It seems to me that the time has now come to discuss the issues of the campaign. Indeed, it is long past due, and this campaign has hardly been representative of our state in view of the fact that the Democratic Party's candidate, Mr. Clark, has felt that the only issue he had was to challenge my integrity as an individual. And I have felt that this was just so out of the question that the people of New York, after 18 years of knowledge of me in the Senate and my publication of every detail about my own financial standing and contributions, etc., something which equals that of any other senator in the Senate and exceeds it, I would simply make it a point which the people wouldn't believe, and indeed they haven't. So at long last, the discussion and the debate has gotten to the issues. Now here, we have the most critical issues of our time facing the man or the woman who will be senator from New York. And I have an extensive record on that score, which I would like to say something about right now, and also some very, very important plans for the future, assuming that the people send me back. Now, one, I had in this last session probably the greatest success as far as the individual citizen is concerned of my whole career, and that was in the enactment into law of the great reform of the private pension plans of the country. There are 35 million workers, about half of the active workforce, who are under these private pensions. And the great reform, which I started in 1967 and which was signed into law on September 2nd, 1974, Labor Day, does the following. It vests the right to receive a pension after working and contributing for a modest and reasonable period of time, a maximum of 15 years. Indeed, 25% of a pension vests at the end of 5 years, 50% at the end of 10 years, and 100% at the end of 15 years. In addition, the pension payment is guaranteed because there is insurance under the law, like federal deposit insurance for bank deposits. And there are many other provisions, but those are the essential ones. Hence, this makes possible for the first time since Social Security a decent retirement for the individual, because the individual can combine his Social Security and private retirement. For example, if a $200 pension is guaranteed to any individual every month once he becomes 62 or 65 years of age, today that generally doesn't become true unless an individual has worked for 25 or 30 years. Under the new law, which I have developed and proposed, this comes true in 15 years. So, and even in 5 years, if an individual leaves a particular employer who has that kind of a pension plan, he would still get one quarter of his pension, no matter where he went or what else he did or whatever other pension he earned, to wit $50 a month, and so on, until in 15 years of work, he got the full $200 a month when the retirement age came. In addition to that, I had another great success with the War Powers Resolution, which for the first time in our almost 200 years of history prevents presidential wars. And we've had those wars from the very beginning of the Republic in the late 18th century and going right up until and through the Vietnam War. Now there can be no presidential war except if the Congress concurs, and that is an unbelievably major reform. Other matters in which I've been very deeply involved are a new minimum wage law, which will increase the minimum wage to $2.30 an hour and extend the benefits of the minimum wage to 10 million more workers. And this includes employees at various levels of government as well as domestic workers. It's a monumental change and a great progress forward. In addition, it solved certain problems of overtime for employees like policemen and firemen and those who work on local transit systems. In addition to the foregoing, I have been very much concerned with expanding unemployment compensation. And in a time of serious unemployment, with the danger of more coming, this is critical. 200,000 New Yorkers are now drawing extended federal benefits for an extra 13 weeks. 30,000 New Yorkers are employed in public service jobs because they've gone through their unemployment benefits completely and still haven't found work. And this number will, under a bill I now am pushing, which has great support not only in the Congress, but in the administration, with the Secretary of the Treasury, the Secretary of Labor, and the Chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, all very deeply interested. This figure will be raised for New York State to 60,000 to 75,000 jobs, as I'm trying to increase the total number for the nation to 500,000, and this has a very good chance of success. Further areas in which I've been engaged have been in occupational safety and health, where we're making a milestone effort to catch up with industrial diseases for the first time in our history. Also, the budget control law, in which I've had a very active part, and which for the first time seeks to bring the Congress into a control of the national budget. And because of the seniority the people of New York have given me, I'm a member of the new budget committee, which has vast power in this regard. And I believe that we must cut our budget to $300 billion overall as the government's contribution to the war on inflation. And being right in there in the budget committee, it will be my job to see to it that the priorities which we give for expenditure do not inordinately emphasize defense, though I deeply believe in adequate and effective defense for our country, but will also give some break and consideration to health, education, housing, and similar national priorities. Finally, I've been deeply involved with the educational system of our country. We've passed a new Higher Education Act with a new grant program to help students who can't afford to pay their own tuition without some help from the federal government. That, by the way, will be very useful to our students in the State University of New York and also in the elementary and secondary education field. And I'd like to say there that I've been particularly gratified by the continuance of the adult education program in our schools, which I originally sponsored and which is now goes through the high school level. There are many other measures which I've been deeply involved in, including, I might say, a new housing bill with new opportunities for the rehabilitation of neighborhoods and the financing of existing properties. A new burst of authority and of money to try to curb crime insofar as the federal government has any control in that regard. And that is for grants to the states under the so-called Safe Streets Act, from which we get a good deal. I might say, too, that this problem of crime in the streets is very real and that I am strongly for gun control in that regard, especially of the handguns and so-called Saturday night specials, which are so dangerous on the streets, gun control which will not at all interfere with a legitimate hunter's or other sportsman's possession of his rifle. Finally, on the anti-inflation front, which I have been engaged in fighting very strongly, on the food matter, I believe that we must curb our exports of food, and I have legislation in for a national food budget which will effectively do that so that we don't suffer higher prices at home because of exports of food, though we should make a provision for catastrophe and starvation, as no American would want to see other people starve if he can help it. And finally, I believe we simply got to allocate credit so that we may direct it into areas where it's the most needed, as, for example, in housing. And I want very much to see a strong conservation program on oil, gas, and energy in the United States. We simply must break this Arab trust, which could bankrupt us and bankrupt the world, and we cannot do it unless we cut our consumption by 15%. And I will work for the law which will bring that about. Well, now, I've given you some concept on the domestic side, and with some reference also to the effort to maintain the peace of all the work that I've been engaged in. I have an unparalleled position for any senator from New York in this century of seniority and standing in the Senate of the United States. I don't like the seniority system, and I voted against it and have tried to change it on many occasions. But when New York has it, rather than southern states or western states, we ought to use it. And I hope very much the people will support me to go back to the Congress and continue this massive work against inflation and for the peace and prosperity of our country.
Hello, everyone. This is Senator Jacob Javits with another report to the people of the state of New York. Today, I have with me a very special guest, and it's a great personal pleasure and honor for me to introduce to the people of my state a man they know very well already, Senator Sam Ervin of North Carolina. Senator Ervin has done me the honor of coming on today to discuss the National Institutions Act from the vast experience he has had as a very prominent senator, a very prominent chairman of one of the major committees of the Judiciary Committee of the Senate, and the chairman most recently of the Special Watergate Committee, which rendered such great service to our country. The National Institutions Act was introduced some months ago by me in a completely bipartisan way with Senators Humphrey and Muskie on the Democratic side and Senator Percy on the Republican side. Its purpose is further to cement the role of the Congress in the federal establishment, which had been so very heavily eroded as to have brought about the great feeling that the Vietnam War was a presidential war, however one felt about the merits of the war, and led to the War Powers Resolution, which I authored and which Congress made law over President Nixon's veto. Now, this is a follow-up. It follows up a good deal of Senator Ervin's own work, as he is the principal protector of privacy here in the Congress, joined with me and with others in a law against impoundments of appropriated funds by the president, and getting a better grip on the budget process, which we're now getting in the House and Senate through budget committees. Now, briefly, the National Institutions Law calls for the right of the Congress to ask questions of the president and his cabinet officers, which is the case in European parliaments. It establishes an office to look over the shoulder of every major government department. Within that government department, it gives the Congress, like the president, the right to give a State of the Union message every year. It requires very strict disclosure of the assets and liabilities of individual senators, and it provides for the establishment of the Office of Legal Counsel of the Congress, so we don't have to go shopping around for lawyers if we issue a subpoena or want to do something else which takes the law and the courts. Well, Senator Ervin, from your vast experience, can you give us something of your view on this question of presidential and congressional power?
Well, before I do, Jack, I want to take the liberty of saying that it's a great privilege to appear on a program with a member of the Senate who I believe can be said to be more deeply concerned about virtually everything that concerns the welfare of man, and who works unceasingly to better the condition of all mankind. I have deemed it one of my great privileges to serve with you in the Senate, and particularly on the Senate Committee on Government Operations, where you have made some of the most wise and most practical suggestions for inclusion of provisions in legislation which are designed to make our government operate as it should in the best form. And the Institutions Bill is one of the wisest, if not the very wisest, proposal of this nature which has ever been made during my 20 years in the Senate. I think that you and I both recognize that under the separation of powers which our Constitution makes among the Congress, the President, and the courts, that it's necessary to put a little of the oil of conciliation and cooperation at the joints of the Constitution to make the doctrine of separation of powers work. And I think this bill is a giant stride forward in providing the machinery by which we can have cooperation if between the legislative and executive branches of our government, if they are willing to cooperate, particularly if the executive branch is, and also give the Congress a most powerful mode of oversight on the functions of the executive, with the performance of the functions of the executive, which is one of the primary obligations of Congress that we could possibly have.
Well, Senator, you're a champion of protecting the rights of privacy of the individual, as well as being a champion of Congress getting its 50-50 share of the job of running government. And first, you embarrass me a bit, and I hasten away from your kind words about me, but I promise not to misuse them in any way, campaign or not. But, Senator, on this privacy, which worries many Americans, you discovered the millions of names that were in the military people's files on individuals, and then the whole tissue of files kept by so many elements of government where the individual might be blackened forever, lose a job, not get a job, be otherwise prejudiced because of information he never saw, heard of, or had a chance to answer. And similarly, as you discovered, in private files, credit companies, banks, etc. And your bill, Senator, is critically important on that, and in at long last giving the defendant, as it were, to wit, the people, a chance to be heard for their individual reputation. Could you tell us a little about it?
Well, this bill recognizes that government has been invading on an unprecedented and ever-increasing scale the privacy of the individual Americans, even in areas where it's not really properly none of the government's concern. We have found out, for example, when they use the army to spy on civilians, that they gather a tremendous amount of information about political views, the religious views, and many of the personal activities of Americans in fields which the government into which the government, in my opinion, had no right to intrude. This bill recognizes that the government does have a legitimate interest in collecting information about the individual where that information is essential to enable the governmental bureaus to carry out laws where such information is essential, such as internal revenue laws and the laws relating to Social Security and Medicare and matters of that kind. But it recognizes that even in those cases that there should be a restriction of the dissemination of information which the government has a legitimate interest in collecting, so as to make it sure that it's not used by any agency of government or by any individual who has no proper need for it.
As a fact, Senator, is it not that in some cases agencies were selling lists of people whom they had gotten listed for various governmental purposes?
Oh, yes, yes.
And that's a real abuse of the governmental process.
Now, I can illustrate. This bill contemplates that the government will be prohibited from collecting information relating to the individual religious views or the individual political views of a citizen who is not a public figure, and that there must be great restrictions put on the use of information. For example, the veterans' hospitals have collected a tremendous amount of information about the emotional and psychological and intellectual state of some of the patients they have treated for psychiatric disorders. Now, this information, of course, is of great value to a physician or psychiatrist who's called upon in the future to treat one of these patients. But it would be a very devastating thing to the individual concerned if they were disseminated to the general public. And so this bill undertakes to deal with the matters of that kind. And I would like to say I'm exceedingly proud of the fact that the Government Operations Committee, with the old cooperation, presented this, reported this bill unanimously, and it's been unanimously reported to the Senate for its action. And for the first time, we really have an opportunity to enact into law a really effective or bill to safeguard the rights of privacy of American people.
Well, Senator, I'm so pleased, too, that you think well of this National Institutions Bill of mine, and of ours, I should say, really, because we have to have a methodology, we have to have a procedure by which Congress can assert itself, if it is to assert itself. I had a group of college students see me this morning, and they said, well, is this permanent? Will the Congress stick with it? Has it really got its teeth in it, or will it, you know, the next time a president comes along who's, quote, a strong president and doesn't have Nixon's terrible difficulties and deficiencies, he'll just take back all that power and you fellas will still be asleep at the switch. What do you think about that?
Well, I have hopes that that it will be permanent, Jack. During my first years in the Senate, I had great concern about the fact that the executive was absorbing, sometimes with the aid of abdication on the part of the legislative, many of the powers the Constitution reposes in the legislative branch of the government. And also, I've been, as you have, concerned about the terrible, unjustified assault which has been made by governmental agencies on the basic and fundamental rights of the people. But during the last few years, I've taken increased hope for the future of our country, because there is a willingness on the part of the Senate, at least, to recapture many of its constitutional powers. And a few years ago, there were just a handful of members of the Congress who had any concern whatever with the invasion of the rights of privacy of individuals, or the assault on the basic rights of individuals. And I find today the very substantial percentage of the Congress has become acutely aware of that.
Well, Senator, wouldn't you feel with me that this will have an effect in the field of equality of taxation and in many other fields, with the Congress getting into it instead of the executive power being supreme?
Oh, yes. This is a realization of the fact that in the ultimate analysis, government should be a servant of the people and not their master. And I'm glad that you made the reference to your meeting with a group of college students, because when I meet with young people, I have my hope for the future of our country very much renewed, because I find that the young people still have idealism. They still have a great deal of energy. They haven't become apathetic like so many of the elders. And I think they have an acute a capacity to realize what's involved in matters of this kind.
Well, Senator, we've got just about a minute left, but you were so prominent as a leader in the Watergate Investigation Committee. Do you think the people of the United States will now be vigilant about keeping to morality in government? Do you think we've really learned the lesson from this terrible immorality shown at the highest level of government?
I believe so. Unfortunately, we have to have sometimes mistakes made to make us do the right things.
Well, thank you very much, Senator Irvin. It really has been a very great pleasure and privilege for me, and I know for the people of my state. And I hope very much that the lesson will be ingrained in all our people, that one, laws which specify procedures by which the Congress can assert its power are essential to the future of our nation in terms of fairness, in terms of constitutional rights, and in terms of morality. And second, that people will not be impatient with the detailed, infinite pains and work which goes into developing the kind of a structure of law by which the American people can live more successfully, more proudly, and more freely. Thank you all for listening to this report to the people of our state. And again, to Senator Irvin, one of our most illustrious members, thank you very much for giving this exposition to the people of the state of New York. And can bring their weight to bear on the White House.
Senator, the attitude of the administration is one of, we must cut spending in order to help relieve inflation. This is one of the victims. And now you're saying to Mr. Ford, no.
When you say one of the victims, all of these questions are questions of degree. Mr. Ford, and with all respect, and I have the greatest respect and indeed affection for him, started out by addressing a joint session of the Congress and saying, do not cut defense.
Subsequently, when he learned a little more about the situation, he had a press conference in which he said, defense is not sacrosanct. I say the same about this. It's a question of measuring the priorities and the amount which is to go to each priority. After all, the administration is ready for a mass transit bill, which is going to be in the billions. Whether it's the House bill or a somewhat lesser version, which they'd like to see passed in the Senate. So it's a matter of degree, no longer of substance and priority. And it is that matter of degree to which I address myself. Much too long a wait. And indeed, there are many who believe that even the time taken for the summit and the necessity for screening out what results from the summit, which certainly means a minimum of 60 days, is too late. There's much opinion to that effect. And I must say that I am one of those of that opinion. But nonetheless, I appreciate the president's dilemma. He's brand new on the job, and this is a fantastically difficult problem. I don't agree that it's a problem that is not susceptible of solution, or that there are not measures that can be taken very promptly which will lead to a solution. I don't agree with that at all. I see that all the time, that writers say, well, it's very complex, it will yield very slowly. We can't afford to wait until it yields slowly. Therefore, I shall urge upon the president, and I will be a party to, I've already been asked to some of these meetings. I will urge upon the president, and I've already submitted memoranda to the president, and I will continue to beat at his door. One, and for action, he doesn't have to wait for the end of the summit. The summit is consultative. He can do it before the end of the summit. So I would urge the president, one, to seek a cooling off period authority and subpoena authority for his new review board on wages and prices from the Congress now. Secondly, I think the time has come for some form of credit controls, which will give priorities to various issues of credit, uses of credit, including capital issues, that is, bond and stock issues. Third, something special has to be done for the building industry. It's just going to pot in a handbasket. And we have done it before. We have fed additional credit into the various agencies which supply credit for construction, and that must be done. And fourth, I believe that it will be tremendous morale builder for our country if we had another conservation drive to cut down on the use of gasoline and energy like we did in the winter of 73-74, and if we have a productivity drive in which the president ought to use his new opening to labor, to get labor to join. I'm trying to prevail on labor through its leaders for the same purpose, but the president's voice could be decisive. Now, there are some things which can be done at once which could change the whole economic climate in this country and the world overnight.
Senator, what happens if we continue, as some of his advisors talk about, to drift until the end of the year and then come to Congress with legislation instead of acting now? What's going to happen?
I do not wish to predict the violent economic difficulties. I'm choosing every word very carefully. But I believe the danger of them is so great as to demand immediate action. And I believe that this crisis is very heavily a crisis of confidence. In this sense, the confidence that the United States is determined to do what it takes to bring about a healthier economic situation. And I might say that includes also some form of confrontation by the big users of oil with the Arab states. We simply cannot pay this Arab bill. And when you see this morning that Iran, which is supposed to be our great friend, is joining in the cutting down of production in order to keep prices up and doing us an enormous favor by not increasing already hold up prices. It just makes your skin run cold. Your blood run cold. These are very urgent matters, and I shall urge them upon the president.
Senator, when you say confrontation, how far do you go?
It would be highly irresponsible to speculate on alternatives, but one thing is sure. The United States and the other nations which are hemorrhaging in terms of their balance of payments, and where the hemorrhaging is increasing every day, will have a right, in my judgment, to say to the Arab countries, you've got to reinvest the money that you're getting country by country in that country so that on balance it's even, though you may have some long-term ownership there, which is okay. And if we don't, then we're paying everything under protest, subject to ultimate renegotiation when the situation favors us instead of favoring you. Pardon? I have no idea. The situation will swing, in my judgment, as we make progress on Project Independence, which I'm all for, and as we make progress in a major conservation drive, which will materially, the United States, you know, could be self-sufficient. It would take real austerity, but in this country, unlike Japan and some of the European countries, the industrial machine will not grind to a halt. And this, we're a big piece of that demand that the OPEC nations are figuring on, a very big piece. Secondly, these various using countries are now seeking to make arrangements among themselves on the contingency that there may be a new embargo, that is, new types of storage, sharing agreements, conservation agreements, and so on. That needs to be very materially accelerated. In short, there is a gravest kind of a crisis in this oil field to this moment, and the public is being lulled into a sense of euphoria by the fact that there is gas at the gas tanks and in the gas stations. The hemorrhage of dollars and other currencies to the Arabs is just as serious as they imposed on us with a cutting off of oil. We cannot endure it.